Well, Renegade, welcome back to the Act of Self-Protection Podcast. I am yet again your host, Mike Williver, and I remain your favorite former Fed. With us today, a new friend of mine. His name is Wes. Wes is in the Indianapolis, Indiana area, somewhere I visited for the first time. Well, I've been through it before, but visited it for the NRA meeting last year. Lovely town. Went to a fantastic steakhouse, but I'll tell you about that later. He is married with a child on the way, so everyone congratulate Wes on that. That's big news. And he is trying to, because of having the new baby, he would like to get out of the 9-to-5 rat race and follow his passion, the thing he loves, which is video production. Is that accurate? Did I say that correctly, Wes?
That is correct. Yeah, mostly video editing due to the fact that I'd be limited to my ability to go film on location. I could do all the video editing remotely. So,
all right. Well, I mean, our podcast editing isn't great because I do it and I'm bad at it. So maybe you can give me some pointers. We'll see how that works out. So listen, if you are, you could potentially work remotely, right? You don't have to be in the same city with someone who wants your services, right?
Oh yeah, correct. Yeah, as long as I have a way of transferring the files to and from the person, either Dropbox or Google Drive, really you can work anywhere with a internet connection.
Right on. So folks, if you're listening, if you have a need for that sort of thing, let me know. Mike at ActiveSelfProtection.com. And I've done it before. I'll do it again. I'll hook you up with Wes and maybe you guys can get some work done and get him some business. That would be great. So he didn't have to be gone away from his new baby all day long. So Wes, tell us about yourself. Are you someone who historically has, I know your story happened a long time ago and it happened when you were still young. But have you been at least since then sort of mindful of your own self-defense and aware of your surroundings, that sort of thing?
Oh yes, for sure. So even before the incident, I was in the process of becoming a black belt in Taekwondo. And so leading up to that point in time, I had been in this self-protection. It probably was the Karate Kid at the time, kind of working its way through the movie scene. But kind of always had like a sense of self-awareness, kind of building up to that. No firearm training before that, but post, I have went and done some, AR style classes, pistol classes, and of course, watching the Act of Self-Protection YouTube channel, podcast, and, app.
Nice. So you are an app subscriber. That's cool. I think you're the first one we've had on who's been subscribed to the app. So we appreciate that. Folks, check the app out. What the app is doing for us in part is helping a little bit of a firewall. YouTube can be a bit capricious at times on how they, whether or not they pay you, how much they pay you. They want to demonetize an individual video for whatever reason. And sometimes we really, you know, John, Neil, Steph, and I will scratch our heads like, that one really? Like of all the videos we put out, that's the one, you know, the age restrict and demonetize. But it happens. And there could come a point, anytime, there could come a point where YouTube's like, no, we're not paying you at all anymore. Or we're deleting your channel because it's got too much violence on it or whatever. So the app is sort of a bulwark against that so we can stay in business and keep doing what we're doing. So plug for the app done. So you said you've had some classes. So do you own, you don't have to answer this if you don't want to. Did you go out and buy a pistol, an AR sort of thing? And if you bought a pistol, what was the first one you bought? I always like to ask that question.
So my first pistol I bought was the Ruger LC9, which is like the compact 9mm single stack back when I first turned 21.
Okay. And then after that, have you bought subsequent guns? And do you mind telling us what they are, like make, model, caliber?
Sure. Yeah. So my first ever gun was actually a shotgun. Long story with that. We had some break-ins at my mom and dad's house with some people robbing mostly the sheds and stuff. So I went out and got a paintball gun. And the guy who was like, you may not want to use that in self-defense. So convinced me to get a 12 gauge. So Maverick 88 was my first my first 12 gauge shotgun. And then since then, I acquired a Fostech AR style rifle. Mm-hmm. And I've went and gotten professional training with that here in Indianapolis at a local range and instructor.
You know, I got to be honest with you. I kind of like the idea that if you don't quote me, this is going to be terrible. I kind of like the idea that if you have time, let's say someone's breaking into your shed, right out back, and you have an acre in between you and them, and you can just put your paintball gun out a crack in the window and just start peppering them with paintballs and see if they'll go away. That could work potentially. Yeah. I'm not going to recommend anyone try that.
Just the idea. Paint appliance.
Just the idea of some knucklehead crook, some meth addict getting peppered with pink paintballs is funny to me. I think that's hilarious.
Oh, for sure.
don't take that as an actual mental rep or any kind of advice. I wouldn't do that. So your incident, as I alluded to a little while ago, your incident happened back when you were in school. So tell us, how old were you? What grade were you in? And what is it that draw the other person's interest to you and your possessions?
Yeah. So I believe this was back in like eighth grade. We think 13 years old at the time. That was when the iPod was kind of starting to come out. We didn't have an all-in-one phone and music device. So we had an iPod, you know, flip cell phone, that sort of stuff. And I had gotten a new iPod video that contained 128 gigs or 200 gigs. It was a huge, big deal at the time.
Yeah.
I remember. So I was bebopping around with that in my pocket.
Was it the long, thin one, like about the size of an Apple TV remote? Or are we talking about the bigger one that's almost like the first gen iPhone size with a big screen?
Yeah, it was more that size. And it had the old scroll wheel on it. So you had the play button at the bottom and stuff. So
if you look back at Steve Jobs announcing the first iPhone, that was one of the potential designs they were going to go with, was a screen with a scroll wheel underneath it. I'm like, I can't imagine how life would be now if there was a scroll wheel on everyone's iPhones. It probably wouldn't have been good. So you were, I believe you said you were on the bus when this went down. So kind of walk us through what happened.
Yeah. So being a kid who was in middle school, maybe not the most popular kid, I left class, started to make my way towards the bus. And our school is unique that it was so small that the high school and the middle school share the same bus route. We didn't have enough bus drivers and nor need enough kids to really warrant having two separate bus systems to take kids to either your house or whatever. It was a very small town in Southern Indiana. So I get on the bus. I'm one of the first kids on the bus. Middle school kind of got out a little bit before the high school. So we were just sitting on there and you kind of like got on the bus and, well, where am I going to sit today? And well, I have someone I have to sit with, that, you know, that sort of thing. So I kind of hugged the middle of the bus, kind of roll the dice, you know, who you'd sit with potentially.
Right.
And so
you're not with the nerds and you're not with the cool kids. You're right in the middle. You're right there. Because for me, I don't know anymore, back of the bus where the cool kids went. Is that still a thing?
Yeah.
I mean, okay. You find yourself in
school, if you sit,
probably a wise decision.
If you sit towards the front, then you were like either the first kid off the bus or you were, you know, always bugging the bus driver, you know.
Yeah, so. For sure. So that hasn't changed. I've been in the school buses, at least, well, I've been on field trips with my kids, but I haven't been personally on a school bus since 1985 or so. So it's good to know some things don't change, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So did someone sit down next to you that had all the best intentions, just wanted to high five you and ask how your day was?
So at that point in time, no one had sat down next to me. We were getting close to the time that bus drivers were getting kind of antsy. They needed to get all the kids on the bus. And then we were single file out the whole school system out of the parking lot and stuff. So the buses had to be like single file. So there are people outside yelling at kids like, get to your buses, go, 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 you know, just trying to get people, you know, done with work and kids on the buses. So I was getting kind of like, okay, I think I'm pretty good. Well, two high schoolers get on the bus and sit in front of me. And previously, this kid didn't ride off all that too often. He was an older classman, high schooler, didn't ride too often, but, you know, kind of caused problems, sat towards the front of the bus, occasionally caused problems there, sat towards the back of the bus, would stand up on, you know, while the bus was going and driving. So kind of caused problems for the bus driver. Some days he was okay. Some days it was whatever, you know, how kids are. And so, I'm just trying to like, you know, duck down below the seat line and just kind of like, you know, lean against the back of the window, when all of a sudden I feel this presence suddenly come down over the top of the seat in front of me. And I look up and it's this kid, this high schooler. Yeah. And I was like, that's odd. And I have, you know, music playing. So I'm like, you need something? Yeah, and when I kind of did that, I leaned forward. Yeah, pull my headphone out. And I leaned forward and I could feel his forearm against my throat. And I was like, that's odd.
Yeah.
And I kind of looked down and I saw there's a folding knife there. And I was like, that's that's not supposed to be there, you know, like, so he had, all I heard was at this point,
he was just starting to basically try to rob you, but he hadn't said anything to you about that. Like, give me your iPod or I'll check you, or whatever.
That was the next thing he said was, give me your iPod.
Okay.
And I was like, no, but I was also startled at the time. Like, he's got a knife. Like, that's not supposed to be on school property or school bus, you know? And I mean, like, we're out in the middle of nowhere, Southern Indiana. Everyone's got pocket knives, but no one carries them at school.
Area here necessarily. It's a small town, I'm assuming, or relatively
small. Oh, yeah.
Out in the rural area. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, everyone carries pocket knives, sure. Even at school, but no one ever would ever thought about using it against somebody else, you know?
Right.
And so at that point in time, I was like, well, he's not taking my brand new iPod. So I kind of quickly grabbed and kind of controlled his wrist. Mm-hmm. That had the with the hand that had the knife in it, and kind of started to like push back away from it to give me some distance. Mm-hmm. And he then put equal pressure against my hand back up against kind of my chest and my throat. And I was like, oh, this is serious. Like, he's not messing around. So then my next thought was, with him kind of lumbering over top of this seat, I then was like, well, I'm going to go for his throat. So I took my right hand and kind of thrust it up against his throat. Mm-hmm. And was like, well, if you can put pressure on me, I'm going to put pressure back on you. And hopefully then both controlling the hand and also the person, mm-hmm, make as much distance as possible. And
how much of a size difference is there between you and him, or is there one?
There was probably, I was probably taller. He had probably more weight on me.
Okay.
So I would say kind of even, but not real, like probably about the same size.
Okay. So your left hand is on the arm, mm-hmm, that has the knife, and your right, mm-hmm, hand is on his throat. Okay. What happens then?
So it kind of became a stalemate. So I was kind of like, okay, well, this is going to be interesting. And I knew the bus was needing to leave, and I knew I had time because that timer was counting down that the buses needed to start rolling. And then he backed off all of a sudden and flipped back into seat, sat down like nothing happened. So
that's very strange. That's a very strange way for that then. So then what do you then go talk to the bus driver or a teacher or someone? Or are you just like, well, I guess we're done here?
So I thought, well, that's weird. I guess we're kind of done here. But I didn't really think it was real at the same time. If that makes sense.
Yeah, kind of does. Yeah. How old were you? What grade you say you were in?
13, 12 at the time.
Okay. So this, I mean, yeah, I would imagine even as an adult, that would seem very surreal to have that happen and have it end the way it did. Doesn't make a lot of sense for someone to just all of a sudden desist in their attack and turn around and sit down and decide to behave himself. Is that how this ended?
Yeah, basically, it's how it ended. And I was like, what the heck just happened? And once again, being in rural Southern Indiana, we had a 45-minute bus ride back to our houses.
Wow.
So then I was stuck in the seat with this kid who just tried to arm rob me, sitting not even a foot in front of me. And so I pondered this the whole time, like, did that happen? Mm-hmm. That couldn't have happened. No, that didn't happen, but it did. Or did it? So I had this conflict in my head the whole time. And I think Stephanie always says, like, rapidly, quickly accept that this is happening to you. And I struggled with that for at least an hour on this bus ride.
So afterwards, you end up talking to someone, telling a teacher, parents, anyone about this?
Real quick, Mike, I think I'm going to turn on this light real quick. I think I'm losing power for my laptop. Yep, there it goes.
All good. No, I haven't.
Let me double check. I forgot my outlet is tied to my light switch. So
that light's better now. So everyone will appreciate the added light. Yeah. So at the end of all this, you end up talking to an adult and telling him what happened?
Yeah. So at the time, my grandmother was actually living with us, and my mom and dad were both nurses. So they would go off to the larger city that kind of was adjacent to our town at the time. So they kind of hung out home and kind of greeted us on the way in and kind of gave us food and kind of watched us as we were, got home from school until they got off their 12-hour shift or their 10-hour shift from the hospital. So I went home and was kind of like, hey, Grandma, have you ever had like someone put like a knife against your throat? And she was like, what?
No.
And she's like, no, not really. You know, like, that's not normal. Did that happen to you? I don't know. Maybe. And she's like, did it happen on the bus? And I was like, yeah. Why would they do that? Well, they're wanting my iPod. And she's like, your new iPod that you got for your birthday? And I was like, yeah. But it's all over though. Like, it's fine. It's fine. And I was kind of like dismissing it, like still questioning if it even happened, honestly.
This is not uncommon, by the way. It's not an uncommon occurrence to have people question, did that really happen? Because it is so outside the norm. You know, it'd be like it'd be like if a horse flew by and you're like, am I going to tell anyone about this? Because I might sound like a nut if I tell them that I saw literally a hornless unicorn go by in the middle when I was on the playground today. No one's going to believe me. They're going to think I'm crazy. Something like almost getting stabbed on the bus for your iPod is, I would assume, extremely outside the norm. This isn't an area where there's a ton of violent crime or, you know, or the school is violent and dangerous or anyone has a concern like that. So this is something that's never actually been brought up on the show, but I'm glad you brought it up because given enough time and enough space from the incident, the longer someone, especially a younger person, ponders something like this, the more they'll talk themselves out of it ever actually having happened. A lot of times, and I know, unfortunately, about this firsthand, some other sorts of childhood trauma can be suppressed in such a way that you have no frontal lobe, you have no memory of it as an adult. So this is something where if you hadn't mentioned it to your grandma, you literally in this day right now, as we're speaking, wouldn't maybe suppress this entire memory. It wouldn't even be in your brain anymore. So I'm glad you didn't mention it. Did grandma spring into action and call the school, your parents, and what happened next?
Yeah. So, I probably went back to bed that day, or I paused off playing upstairs on my, N64 or, you know, whatever Game Boy we had at the time. And my dad came up and said like, hey, so I won't mention like, something happened on the bus. And I was like, yeah, kind of like retold the story about this kid who just came up the top of the bus seat. And he's like, well, let me talk to your aunt who happened to work at the school. She was actually the secretary of the school. And I was like, okay. And she's like, let me talk to her, see what we can do. At the very least, like maybe like scare this kid into thinking like, you know, I think he was kind of appeasing to me, like, don't freak out. It's okay. I'm glad you told us. So he ended up calling my aunt, and just so happened that the vice principal of the school was actually a part-time either state or county officer. So that was actually convenient. Once again, small town, not much crime. People needed multiple jobs to kind of feed the family. So he happened to have that position. Went back to school that day. About midday, I got a call from the front office. Mr. Anderson, can you please report to the front office? So I walked downstairs. My aunt's there, kind of gave me a hug and was kind of like, if you want me to go back there and talk to him with you, you're more than welcome to. And being a kid that, you know, never got in trouble, I've never been into his office before. So it was kind of a whole new experience. So walked back to his office, sat down, and he's just like, I want to let you know that, you know, I am a police officer. I think it was part-time or some relevancies to it.
Reserve, something like that? Like a reserve officer?
Yeah. Okay. Reserve officer. And so I actually wrote out my whole deposition and kind of wrote out like the whole what happened, color, shirt, you know, as much as I can describe of the person. And he's like, do you know who it was? And I said, well, of course I do. And I told the person's name. And he's like, oh, so there's no question about who it was. And I was like, oh no, it was this person.
Sure.
And he was like, oh, well, that makes it kind of easy. And so did he bring me back my
the person who would try something like that? Or was it like, okay, that figures. And of course it was, you know, Billy Johnson or whatever.
At the time, I was like, yeah, it's this person. And he was like, oh, okay, sounds good. I didn't think anything about the time. Come to find out later, he had a repeat kind of rap sheet with the school. And actually with, I believe with law enforcement at the time, I think he kind of magically escaped any kind of actual getting in trouble with anybody. Yeah. Consequences, thank you. And this was the first time that they may have like locked him in on this issue or on a consequence or an action that resulted in a big consequence. Mm. So I kind of went home a couple of days later, got called from the school again, come down the office, please. So I entered the office and he said, well, we got him. Good news and bad news. And I was like, oh no. I was like, am I going to see this kid again? Am I going to have any kind of interaction with this kid? And he said, so unfortunately, your school bus does not have any cameras on it. And I thought, well, yeah, of course. Like, what school buses have cameras on them? And he's like, but we did find a knife on him. So at that point in time, it's your word against his. But I believe the court's going to take your testimony into the case and try to push as hard as I can to make sure that he does have some kind of time served. And I go, oh. So I was like, yeah. So my testimony, oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think I have an idea what's going on in the back of your mind as a junior high schooler, which is, holy crap, this guy's going to come find me and kick my butt or kill me or worse, or who knows, right? Or is that mm-hmm. a consideration you had at the time?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I was like, this guy's going to come out and find me. And at the same time, I was like, well, at least if he's locked away, he can't come get me. So kind of like a good thing and a bad thing. I was like, I just don't want this kid around me anymore. I believe he ended up being trialed as an adult because he was older than me in the high school. And I believe with his recurring rap sheet that kind of played into the judge's decision to kind of throw the book at him. Well, I mean, and as far as I know.
And in 11th grade at the same time. So that should tell you. No, I'm kidding. I have no idea how old he is.
But yeah, so kind of threw the book at him. And I never saw that kid come back to school. So I believe he truly was missed his high school because of that incident. Yeah.
Well, good for you for bringing it up to your grandma. I mean, you know, I just talked to Stephen Gutowski. We recorded... I'm not sure when this episode we're doing right now is going to come out, but I just spoke to him about the case in Michigan where the kid, the teacher saw the kid writing all sorts of, really crazy stuff in his notebook about hearing voices and all that sort of thing. And then the parents showed up at school and everybody kind of went, oh, it'll be fine. We'll deal with this later. And sent the kid back to class. He then produced a gun and shot a bunch of people. It is very hard, especially at a young age. This is nothing you've ever experienced before. It's very hard. Ask me how I know. The easy thing to do would have been to not mention it and just keep your head down, mm-hmm. and move forward. At which point, and you and I both know this, this kid would have victimized more people, probably on the school mm-hmm. bus, done whatever you wanted with impunity. So it is very difficult to step forward, especially knowing you're probably going to bump into this guy at some point. Maybe they'll let him back into school. You don't know. You're a kid. Mm-hmm. And that's very, very difficult. So I commend you for following through with it because that's something that I think a lot of people would not do just for that exact reason. I remember years ago there being a terrible domestic violence incident in the apartment below myself and my wife. This is back in the 90s in Southern California. And I was a brand new federal agent at the time. And, everyone in the complex had called the police on this guy. It was very noisy, very loud, and it sounded terrible. And there was a little kid screaming, all sorts of stuff, don't hurt my mommy. And there's literally pictures falling off the wall in our apartment upstairs because of how hard he's throwing her against a wall. And everybody called 911. And I may have waited like 4 minutes or 5 minutes. I couldn't take it anymore. And I had to go down and knock on the door and hopefully intervene. And I did. And I got the kid in the girlfriend out of the apartment and had him sit on the stairs, and he yelled at me and called me a rookie, and he was going to come back, and him and his homeboys were going to do this and that and the other thing. Not a good feeling, not a good feeling to know that they know where you live. They know, he could be there when I'm not there. My wife's there. The kids are there. So I understand what it's like to have to you know, do the right thing in a situation like that. And it's not fun and it's not a good feeling. In fact, he threatened, like I said, he threatened to come back and do this and that. As it turns out, fun fact and a good end to that story is that the female half and the kid beat feet. They got out of town. They left him never to return. And I got a call. I can't remember it now. It's been so long, maybe a year later, from the DA's office asking if I'm still willing to testify in that case. And they told me the female half is gone. She's in the wind. They don't know where she is. But they can still get the guy for intimidating a witness, for threatening a witness, which is what I was, apparently. So I went in and testified against him in court. We no longer were neighbors. I no longer lived there. So I felt a lot better about it at that point because I wasn't, you know, he didn't know where I lived, hopefully. And that guy got time. He got serious time for that witness intimidation. And it didn't help his case that in court, he decided to scoff and smirk and make threatening faces. And the judge saw that. So I say all that to say this, well done. Before we part ways, I don't want to leave anything out. I'm always afraid I'm going to miss something. So was there anything else that we didn't cover that you wanted to talk about, Wes?
Yeah. So kind of what you said, like the aftermath a little bit, you know, I started to go back on that bus. And there are other kids in the high school and on that middle school who knew that kid. And actually, I got the rap of being a tattletale saying that, oh, that didn't really happen. He didn't really do that to you. And like, when you look around, like I didn't remember any witnesses. I'm sure the kids were just hunkled down behind in their seat, just wanting to be left alone and just get to the next day, you know. But I kind of had to deal with those consequences a little bit, for good or right. You know, it's one of those things where socially, I was kind of still pushed away from everybody else in that group. And I only say that you know, when a kid comes to you like this and they need help, or you think they need help, and maybe read between the lines as a parent, what are they actually saying? Mm-hmm. You might want to comfort them in saying that, you know, this might have consequences, but you did the right thing. You know, kids may not like you because of this, but you still did the right thing. Mm-hmm. And I think for that, my grandmother kind of saw through that and was like, he's saying something that's off, but so specific that it had to be true, you know?
Right. And plus, what's the upside for you for making this up?
Like, nothing.
there is none. I don't want to forget, folks, if you're listening or you're watching on the app, God bless you. If you're listening, thank you so much. Don't forget, my email address is mike@activeselfprotection.com. So if you have a story for us, for our audience, please reach out to me and let me know. I am the podcast for the most part. I do all the editing, interviewing, guest arranging, and everything. So if you email me, I get that email. And I will get back to you. As Wes can attest, I will get back to you as promptly as I possibly can. And if you're looking for someone to do some kind of video production, that is Wes's passion. So reach out to me at that same address, and I will put you two together. You don't have to live in Indianapolis. You can be anywhere in the world, really, with an internet connection. And get that done. So, Wes, I want to thank you again. Hang on the line once we are done with the show here. I do want to talk to you a little bit more. Folks, sure. Thank you so much for watching. And, Wes, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate it.
Absolutely.